Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with National Catholic Register's senior editor Joan Frawley Desmond about her recent interview with Boston's Cardinal Sean O'Malley. Cardinal O'Malley spoke about all the work that's been done since the clergy sexual abuse crisis and the hope that he has for the Church. And in our second half, Register columnist Catherine Jean Lopez will be here. She'll discuss the repercussions of the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary, and an article that she wrote about the rise of Catholic Republican Rick Santorum. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello, Tim. Welcome to our first show of the new year.
Yes, Happy New Year, Tom.
Delighted to be with you, my friend. You know, one of the missions of this program is to showcase the important work of the Church and the work that the Church is undertaking, even on sensitive issues. Certainly, the clergy scandal is the most sensitive issue of our time. We're very delighted to have Joan Frawley Desmond back on Register Radio to discuss the situation in Boston.
That's right, Tom. And Joan Frawley Desmond is no stranger to Register Radio. She has been a guest on Register Radio before. She recently had the great opportunity to sit down with Boston's Cardinal Sean O'Malley, and they discussed many different topics, including the clergy sexual abuse crisis and Cardinal O'Malley's work to rebuild trust in the Church. And to learn more about her interview with Cardinal O'Malley, we thought we'd have her on Register Radio today. Joan, thanks for taking the time to be with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Tim. Happy to be here, and Happy New Year to you.
Joan, as most listeners will recall, Cardinal O'Malley became Archbishop of Boston in 2003 following the resignation of Cardinal Bernard Law, and that was in large part due to Cardinal Law's role in reassigning clergy who had sexually abused children. In the wake of the abuse crisis, what specific efforts did Cardinal O'Malley take in Boston?
Well, let me speak to this first, going back to his arrival. I was there at his installation in 2003, and you can imagine it was a celebration in the sense of that the Church, you know, was getting new leadership and a fresh start, but it was also, you could feel the pervading, you know, mood of anxiety and concern about the future. So there at the installation, he really gave an impassioned homily that expressed this deep desire to really embrace the suffering Church of Boston, particularly embrace the wounds and everything that had happened to the survivors of clergy abuse in the past, but also at the same time to shore up the sense of hope and future sense of future purpose for his priests. And so at the homily, he said, you know, Christ said he'd always be there with us, but he also said it wouldn't be easy. And so he's had a number of different missions since 9 years ago when he first arrived in Boston. The most important one is to restore a sense of trust. And so we spoke on that topic when I met with him at his rectory residence. And even that was significant. He moved out of the bishop's residence into a rectory in a, you know, poor area of Boston where the cathedral is, and that kind of set the tone for a new era in what he hoped would be greater transparency, a restoration of trust, reaching out in a pastoral way to those harmed by clergy abuse, and also helping to uphold the sense of hope and vocation, commitment to vocation for his priests, reaching out to families who had been affected and other Catholics who may have turned away from the Church after all the revelations in the Boston Globe. Don't forget that the revelations were not made originally by the Church. They were made by the Boston Globe in a series of truly shattering headlines involving documents taken from personnel files that, as you said, charted some of the decisions made to move priests around with allegations rather than removing them from ministry. So speaking on the issue of trust, the cardinal implemented a number of different policies. First, he was trying to make things more transparent so that there was greater communication between the faithful and the archdiocese on any ongoing allegations. And at first, there were still some new allegations. There were also primarily, and that continues to be true today, historic allegations involving cases that occurred in the past, but where survivors were only now able to come to the church or to law enforcement with this information due to the fact that they had reached an age where they were able to kind of gather up the courage to do so. So much more communication and transparency about reporting of fresh allegations, historic allegations, reaching out, providing safe environment training. Mm-hmm. That's gone on, of course, across the nation. And one thing that's interesting about this is that there has been controversy on the issue of safe environment training, with some people feeling like children in parochial schools are getting too much information, and some people see it as kind of an aggressive sex education approach that affects the innocence of children. But the cardinal said he's tried to take into account those concerns and criticisms, but he also said what was interesting was once he implemented information, you know, so the children were aware of the possibility of sex abuse, about importance of boundaries, of course, clergy being trained in boundaries, Catholic school teachers, volunteers, anybody dealing with Catholic schools or with young people, CYO, in any kind of volunteer capacity, they've all had safe environment training, as has been the case in much of the country. And what was interesting was after these concerns were raised, people said, you know, I think this is too much. He said, well, let's just implement this. And pastors also said, well, CCD, too much time is taken up with this. Our public school kids are already getting this in public school. So he said, fine, we'll go back and find out what they're getting in public school. So, you know, we'll accommodate that. If we don't need to provide this safe environment training for children, we won't. Well, it turned out, he said, in most cases, almost no information was provided. So certainly a key theme moving forward, I think, and the cardinal emphasized that in a pastoral letter that came out marking this very sad, tragic anniversary. He said his goal now is to try to bring this message to the larger public, as already happened with the Penn State allegations, so that it's not just the Catholic Church, but the Catholic Church in some way, and perhaps this is the silver lining, can be a model for other institutions who also work with children, whether they're public schools, sports groups, you know, wherever they might be.
Sure. I want to remind listeners that you are listening to Register Radio. I am Tim Drake, and we are speaking with Joan Frawley Desmond, senior editor with the National Catholic Register. We're talking about her interview with Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston. Was there any surprises that came out of your interview with Cardinal O'Malley?
I was surprised by one thing for sure. I have known Cardinal O'Malley as a Catholic journalist for many years, going back to the 1980s. He started off in the Virgin Islands, then he was appointed to Fall River, then he had to go where there was a major case involving a repeat offender. Then he went down to Palm Beach, where he had to address more scandals. And finally, Boston, you know, which in many ways was the most explosive scandal. And, you know, there was still very much a sense of hope. Oh, and I forgot to mention, he was then appointed by the Vatican to go and address clergy abuse in Ireland to help Yes. provide and supervise investigations there. So the surprise to me is that he still has a true sense of hope and purpose in making changes in the church, despite everything that's happened. You know, he clings to the cross, I think. He said he has a strong spiritual life. He continues to meet with survivors, you know, frequently. He continues to have to answer media responses. And so you'd think that, you know, part of him might just become frustrated and want to throw up his hands and say, what more can I say or do? But I didn't sense that with him. I sense a renewed purpose, a commitment to securing these policies moving forward, you know, and hopefully that will be the case. I think it's truly a test of his faith and leadership to stay focused on something, you know, 9 years after, just in the case of Boston, he has been addressing this.
Yeah, and speaking about his work with survivors, the thing that has always struck me, and I was very struck by it during the Pope's trip to Washington, D.C. and New York, was that Cardinal O'Malley, I believe, was the one behind setting up the meeting of Pope Benedict XVI with some survivors during that trip. And it was a very touching moment during that trip of the Pope meeting with these survivors.
Tim, often for journalism nowadays, you do things by phone. But to be up in Boston and to, I spoke with the Cardinal. I also spoke with Barbara Thorpe, the Director of Services to Survivors. I spoke with local priests. And what I was really struck by in these face-to-face encounters by all concerned was a complete commitment to the needs of survivors. I think there was a time perhaps when people thought, oh, we can implement policies and everything, you know, will be taken care of and we can move on, you know. No, they don't think that it's so easy to move on, and they know they can't move on, and that suffering is at the very center of the heart of the church's ministry. And we, the Catholic Church and its teachings, affirm the mystery and the purpose of suffering in a way that no other religion really does. And so I think the message of the Holy Father when he arrived in 2008 was that we're not a Hallmark card faith. We have to deal with difficult things, and we have a faith that allows for that, that has tools for that, that has a teaching that can help make sense of suffering, and that when there is suffering, we don't kind of go into denial mode. We actually embrace it. We actually deal with it. Well, that's easier said than done. I think the church in Boston, like many dioceses throughout the country, has been on a pilgrimage. I think there have been many moments when people thought, okay, haven't we done enough? And then they realize, no, it's not over yet. There's a kind of spiritual testing going on, and I think at times survivors have felt, when some people say, okay, these are old wounds, we can move on now, survivors have said, you know, we're still here, and there are people who are still going to be coming forward. So that means that you almost have to go into a deeper spiritual state to be renewed and to be available over a longer period of time. And certainly the Holy Father has made that clear. A beautiful experience for me in the process of reporting on this case, this story in December, was getting in touch with survivors. You know, we all hear about survivors through organizations that represent victims of clergy sex abuse, but it's rare that we really have a direct encounter with them. The Register posted a story by a woman I've gotten to know a little bit, Faith Hakesley Johnson, and she basically described her own a pilgrimage of faith from the original abuse, which occurred when she was 15 years old, just horrible. Her struggles to come to grips with it through therapy, but also, like with so many survivors, where the abuse was directly connected with the experience of faith in a church or with a priest, she also had to find a way to keep going with her faith. She wanted to. And while one person had said, well, maybe you just don't need the church anymore if this is an issue, you know, and if this causes you stress, and she thought, no, that's not the solution. So she really took hold of this, and she said there have been many moments when it's been tough where she's just sort of steeled herself and made this a decision, you know, that the Holy Spirit can just guide her through. She said when she met the Holy Father, you know, it was just beautiful. It was kind of like the end of this very long journey. He was very gentle and just congratulated her. She was getting married, which is in itself a kind of sign of hope for someone who's experienced this kind of abuse. And she was really inspired. The Cardinal told me he was very inspired by Benedict's statement. And in fact, in the pastoral statement that the Cardinal released to mark this anniversary, he also quoted extensively from the Holy Father's pastoral letter to the church in Ireland about how that our faith and the redemptive act of Christ embraces the brokenness of survivors, and that we should never turn away from that experience because it's hard to deal with.
Well, Joan, I want to point readers to the National Catholic Register online, ncregister.com, to read your fine interview and the other article that you're referencing. And thank you, Joan, for taking time to be with us today on Register Radio.
You're welcome, Tim.
Well, when we return, you may have heard that this is a big year. 2012 is a big, big year. Why? Because it's a leap year. No. Seriously, it's an election year here in the United States. And when we come back, we will discuss the Republican primaries and we'll focus on one specific candidate. Find out who it is when we come back. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in the culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
If it's happening at the Vatican, the United States, or anywhere else in the world, look to EWTN News for live coverage of landmark events in the life of the Church. From today's headlines to compelling interviews with Catholic newsmakers, EWTN News, only on the Global Catholic Network.
It's fun.
It's free.
It's Wings, EWTN's weekly e-newsletter delivered to your inbox free each week. Read about upcoming special programming.
And learn what's new at EWTN, radio, TV, and internet.
Just send an email to radio@EWTN.com.
Be sure to put Wings in the subject line.
Wings, a free service from your friends at the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
Pray with us, the Holy Rosary, daily on the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. And Tim, you know, the fur is flying, my friend. The accusations are filling the air like a heavy snowfall, and it's only January. Well, that could only mean a presidential election year. We're very delighted to bring on Catherine Jean Lopez to kind of shine a light on all this.
That's right. Catherine Jean Lopez serves as editor of National Review Online. And in addition, her work has appeared all over the place, in particular the Wall Street Journal and the National Catholic Register. And she recently published a piece in the Register about the rise of Rick Santorum. So we thought we'd talk to her about the Republican primaries. Catherine, thanks for joining us on Register Radio.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on.
Well, there certainly weren't any big surprises in Tuesday's New Hampshire primary, were there?
No, there really weren't. First of all, independent voters can vote in this more liberal state compared to Iowa's caucus electorate. So it wasn't a surprise. There's a couple of things that are funny about some of the coverage. First of all, in the Iowa caucus, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum basically tied. But that's sort of, and there is actually even some question as to who came in on top, some questions about some votes and things. So it's possible that Rick Santorum won, but the fact is, sure, it's a virtual tie, right? but we tend to forget, especially talking heads types, tend to forget that as days pass. And so by Tuesday, when we hit the New Hampshire primary, there was talk about this. It was as if Mitt Romney had won this overwhelming victory in Iowa, which was certainly not the case, although it was a significant win for him, despite the fact, obviously, he put money into Iowa. He wasn't really campaigning in Iowa until December. It wasn't because last time he ran, 2008, there were high expectations for him in Iowa, and they didn't pan out, so he wasn't really competing there. And so in the end, he would come in on top was a significant victory for him, and he did
sure.
Also did put time in at the end, but so obviously Santorum had a lot of momentum coming out of Iowa, and it has been taken in a lot of the media coverage as if he's lost some of that momentum because he didn't win in New Hampshire or come close to winning in New Hampshire, but he didn't ever expect to. He was really focusing on Iowa and South Carolina, and
okay.
South Carolina, of course, is the next primary.
Yeah, and it's interesting that we have two Catholic candidates running. We've got Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum. Following Rick Santorum's second place finish or first place, depending on how many dead voters voted in Iowa. No, it's a caucus. That's right. So you wrote about Santorum's rise. was Rick Santorum's rise in Iowa primarily due to Iowa's evangelical voting base, or was there something else going on? Do you think he represents a new kind of Catholic candidate?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things going on. I think, of course, the conventional view is that he was the last alternative to Romney. People had gone through, or at least the media, frankly, had given a moment to Herman Cain, to Michelle Bachmann, to Rick Perry. To Newt Gingrich had been the last one before Santorum, and then Santorum started getting this new momentum. But I'm a friend, Rick Santorum is actually a friend of mine, and so I remember when he was first talking about running, and which at the time sounded crazy to most people because he had lost his last race by 18 points. His strategy was to work really hard in Iowa and knock on as many doors as he could, and he certainly attributes and others do as well his showing to a lot of hard work. And I do think, in addition to that, I think there is something to the message that he's campaigning on. And I think, and one of the things that I think the media gets wrong, while obviously the life issue and the marriage issue are at his core, and he's known for them, that's not what he's been campaigning on. That's not to say that he's walked away from it. But what he's managed to do on the campaign trail, I think successfully, especially to people who are actually listening to him versus people who write about him not necessarily listening to what he's saying, is he's completing the picture. He knows that this is a time where people are very concerned about economics, obviously, and he relates how the family is important to our economic success, to our success as a nation, and I think that resonates with people. It's not like he's talking about life and marriage as if they're separate issues, but as part of a complete picture. And obviously, that is something different for Catholic candidates in the sense that for so long, who are the Catholic candidates we think of? We think of the Kennedys. We think of Joe Biden or Kathleen Sebelius. We think of candidates who are for abortion rights and not apologetic about that. And who obviously are unable to paint that whole picture, and they treat those issues as if those are private issues, and they have no connection to our economic and cultural and moral successes.
Sure. What we're seeing is those who have taken the lead so far represent three different elements of the Republican Party. We've got Ron Paul representing the libertarian element. We've got Romney kind of representing the business element, and Santorum representing the social conservatives. Do you kind of see it that way?
I think that's some of it, but I think in addition you have I don't think it breaks down that easily. I think some of the people who are for Ron Paul are sort of a protest vote. Every time I've been in at a Ron Paul rally or speech or kind of event, it's overwhelmingly attracts sort of a 24-year-old white guy who I think thinks that libertarianism is libertinism, and so he can do whatever he wants. you can draw that picture, and so I think that there's just sort of this cool college aspect to him. That's some of it, but I think some of it too is more than that. Though I think that some of it is just a general, I'm ticked off at the system, and he represents being ticked off with the system. So I don't think it's all. Sure. All an isolationist move or foreign policy based, and it's also, I think, more complicated with who goes for Santorum and who goes for Romney because Santorum, as I noted, isn't necessarily talking about abortion and marriage at every stop. He winds up talking about abortion and marriage at every stop because he gets asked about it. But that's not what his stump speech leads with. I am pro-life, and I'm going to. So I think that's a little more complicated. I think one divide you're definitely seeing, though, in recent days, especially, is people are having a really bad reaction to Newt Gingrich's sort of anti-free enterprise attack line, which is best represented by these ads that a super PAC is running against Mitt Romney's business career. It's interesting how sort of the negative can have things play out.
Sure. Well, I had a lot of other questions I had hoped to ask you, Catherine, but we are out of time. And so we will just have to have you back again on Register Radio. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Well, just to remind everyone that the Register and EWTN are not endorsing or supporting any candidate or any party, but it is important to bring these positions of each candidate to our listeners and readers so that they can make an informed decision. Right, Tim?
That's right, Tom.
Well, very good. And we thank you so much for joining us on Register Radio. For all of us here at the Register and at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.